Well, many minds have been occupied recently by the whole debate around free speech. Elon Musk is a libertarian, but somebody who thinks like Elon Musk in South Africa is a right-winger. What the heck is going on? We then also have Pavel Durov, who's the man who founded, a billionaire who founded Telegram, being arrested because his app is not monitoring itself or moderating itself as well as the French authorities believe it should be. Sarah Gon is with the Institute for Race Relations. Then that means that she comes with a whole bunch of credibility before you start. This is the oldest think tank in South Africa, and she's the head of strategic engagement there. But she's also got a particular interest in free speech, and we've asked her to give us some insights into what the heck is going on in the world. Sarah, thanks for joining us. Maybe we can just go back into your background, just to start off with. You see from your various bios that you were actually in the legal profession, a lawyer for 17 years, and then decided to, I guess you could call it, go into public service.
I think so. Yes, I helped found and for a period managed the Johannesburg Philharmonic Orchestra. I'm not a musician, but so I played Adnan, let's put it that way, which orchestras, like all other good entities, need. And then eventually drifted back into sort of, I guess, my love is politics in general, you know, and all things pertaining to it. But I'm also I run the unit that is now linked to IRR, which is the Free Speech Union of South Africa. I am the sole employee at the moment, but we are allied to the UK, Australian, and New Zealand organizations. And we've just formed a sort of international association to assist and encourage other organizations in other countries to get into the fight over free speech.
So this is your sweet spot. All about free speech. Let's start with Elon Musk. He regards himself as a free speech absolutist. Now, when you talk to guys in the crypto field, if they're a Bitcoin absolutist, they say, forget anything else in cryptocurrency, stick with Bitcoin. What does it mean in Elon's perspective when he describes himself that way?
If you're an absolutist, I think it essentially is what it says it is. Anything goes. Anything can be said, which means anything can be heard or read, and whether you like it or not, irrespective of whether it may have consequences for the country, it may encourage insurrection or whatever it may be, you're okay to say it. South Africa is interesting because we have a lot of free speech, and the limits on our free speech constitutionally, you really only look to attempts to overthrow the state or hate speech that can incite violence immediately. So it's fairly circumscribed, and it only covers areas such as race, religion, gender, and there's a fourth area. It was expanded by what we call the Equality Act, where people can sue civilly for committing hate speech, and we've seen the Penny Sparrows of the world be subject to the consequences of that. I would favour, though, you know, we haven't had any decisions that have said it's completely not constitutional. I would just favour the limitations provided by the Constitution, because I think free speech really is best dealt with in the public sphere, which, for good or for bad, is what you see essentially happening on the social media. It's people responding to things, it's people calling out, it's people writing alternatives. I think law is by and large the sort of last option for dealing with free speech and for dealing with the consequences, and should be very, very rarely used. We're not supportive of the criminalization of hate speech.
I guess the problem with all of this is the individuals who get attacked for exercising their right to free speech often have their lives changed and sometimes almost destroyed. I remember what happened with Chris Hart. He wrote something pretty innocuous, if you go back to today, to what he said, and that caused him to be fired by Standard Bank. They didn't like the reaction that it evoked. And you've got something similar right now with a serious protagonist of free speech in the form of Roman Kabanak, who's been appointed by John Steenhuisen, the leader of the opposition, to be his chief of staff in the Department of Agriculture. And there's a lot of unhappiness about that in certain quarters, because here's a guy who's exercised his right to free speech, but it could indeed affect his career prospects. How do you view something like that?
Well, you see, the problem is that that is largely a feature of where things are politically, ideologically, which group of elites has the currency. And in this country, one of those issues is are your political views, are your attitudes to or for against issues of race. And the only, to my mind, you have the right to free speech, but there is a responsibility involved. So that means that, for example, if you put something on X that may be misinterpreted, you have to be prepared to defend it or go for the consequences. It's very much a societal response, and the arguments for and against it are what changes the responses to the exercise of free speech. And I think the only problem is we're very used to exercising our free speech, which we're not particularly well versed in being alert to the responsibilities of how we exercise it, and that there could be a comeback. So I think that's part of the equation. And of course, social media is the ideal medium to express things badly in the spirit of the moment or unwisely. And so much is about how you say something, and you're absolutely entitled to say it. Just I think when you go into a very public platform, you've just got to just be a bit alert, and that responsibility is yours. So I think in Roman's case, part of the problem is that his podcast has a clear leaning, but the sort of things that he's grappling with are things that have appeared on those broader platforms where anyone can see them and anyone can forward them on, and they spread like wildfire. So that's where the idea of responsibility comes in. And I'm very keen in promoting to future generations the idea of controversy, insult, criticism, but people learning to understand there's a distinction between all of those things and actually being homophobic or racist or something else. And that's part of a process that has to be learned and debated and discussed, and we don't nearly do enough about the issues behind the subject for cancellation or attack, etc.
It's interesting, if you go to another member of the Democratic Alliance in Ronaldo Gous, the controversy that erupted over, I guess he was being a bit of a shock jock when he said what he said and then went back. Because if you watch the whole clip, he said some horrific things to grab the attention of the viewer, and then afterwards kind of backtracked on it to say, yes, if I said this and believed it, you would have kind of cancelled me or whatever. But unfortunately for him, what he said was so shocking that people have now taken that and used it against him. I guess there's a very big lesson in that as well, Sarah.
There is, but as you say, the point that Ronaldo was making was not per se an unusual or sort of singly held view on something. He was using, as you say, very sort of shock jock language to try and convey the point he was making. But here, you see, you've got the report from that the press ombudsman has essentially ordered IOL to issue an apology because what they did, and this is again what I talk about, you know, how you do things, and very poor journalism, I mean very unprofessional, is they took it's nasty because they simply spliced out something that looks fundamentally racist in its extreme outside of the context. Now, obviously, what Ronaldo probably realized fairly quickly is that the capacity for that to happen can completely undermine the fact that what was the point that was trying to be made was not an invalid one. But, you know, we live in a society where racism and the use of race and race nationalism is a party political tool to up the ante and to convey a view. And we've seen it from the other side, Julius Malema et al., often. So it's not that the subjects can't be aired, but again comes to the responsibility. I mean, IL, I think, is unforgivable. I mean, it's just extraordinarily poor journalism. And it got a result that they wanted that he didn't deserve, as simply as that. So it's really using institutions like ombudsman and councils that monitor these sorts of things to keep the professionals honest and on track. And that's how society works. The medium itself, the media in the broad sense, are other means. So it's not always clean. It's sometimes very messy. It can have appalling results, but that's why you've got to tackle the ideas and you've got to have the debates, and that we're not having enough.
Sara, what about the arrest of Pavel Durov? He arrives on his private jet. He's a very wealthy guy, obviously brilliant, left Russia 10 years ago because of the issues that he was facing there. And he goes to France and he gets off the jet in France and gets arrested and put into jail because his platform, Telegram, is not being well enough moderated, according to the French officials and presumably other officials as well. It doesn't seem fair, but on the other hand, I guess the responsibility has to lie somewhere.
Well, you see, I think the problem here is we don't know enough, because I have read a report about the most the French will advise about the matter is that he has breached criminal law by supposedly knowing some of the criminal about the criminal activities that were crossing his platform, drug trafficking, terrorism, et cetera, et cetera. So without knowing the detail, it's actually very difficult to comment on whether there's a justification in it or whether it's an overreach, an impingement on free speech. So it's terribly difficult to comment wisely on it. And I'm not versed in the detail. I don't think anyone is. I think the French are keeping it very close to their chest. For the meantime, but it does go in some way to say, well, I think, let me go back a step. I think one of the problems with moderation with the treating social media as publishing information and requiring moderation is a thankless task. So you're either going to have to let everything go through it, or you're going to clamp down on aspects of it and require moderation, which cannot be properly policed anyway, and are which are left up to the discretion of the platform to judge whether something doesn't pass muster or may be criminal. And of course, the problem is there may be it may just be a view that people don't like. I mean, there's been a plethora of people removed from X and other platforms for committing hate speech when they, all they're doing is expressing an opinion that a particular powerful interest group doesn't like. And I don't think whatever they do that the social media platforms will ever be able to properly monitor that for a reason, because it becomes subjective and outside their area of expertise. Now, to compare that with the legacy media, we've never had issues with the fact that traditionally radio, television, and print could monitor what they get and decide what to put up. But that's the whole purpose of the nature of the professional engagement and the release of information. And that's why papers will have, media will have different biases, but they still adhere to a professional code. And B is deciding that they do decide what they do, curate what goes on. They will not print every letter in a newspaper, and you have to. I know when my days of furious letter writing had to have my name, even if they didn't agree not to print it. But they had to have my name. They had to know I was legitimate, and they had to have an address so they could see I was not sort of part party political shill, you know, trying to get a view across. So there were those controls, but we wouldn't have seen that as interfering with the freedom of speech, because the right to say anything is not per se the automatic right to have it published to the world. And I think one of the problems is social media has been treated as a form of media, and I'm not sure it really is. I'm not sure that social media isn't much more like a cell phone or a telephone. It's a means for getting stuff out. It's not a source of curating information. And so the problem with misinformation, disinformation, it's a bit like having a phone call. If I were to phone you and say, Alec, I think it's time we sort of, you know, initiated a coup against the government. If the conversation is between you and me, unless there's suspicion outside amongst the authorities that something may be going on, in which case they can then subpoena information in terms of our criminal law, which is how things have always been done, and I assume it's probably how it works in France as well, then you're going outside of the speech to attack the potential criminality. And I think regarding the media as media is probably fundamentally wrong. It's a means of communications. It's not a professional publication service. And the problem is everyone's expressing any view left, right, and center, and people are being cancelled and disconnected at a rate of knots. But it always springs up. And I think the type of measures that countries want to put in place for curation miss that point. They could look, I think, for example, you can't create a name. Your identity should be known. In other words, the way that you would if you go on newspaper. Most of the celebrities do it. Whatever they say, you know they've said it. But I'm inclined to think that the people who sit there in dark rooms and really want to progress transgender women in women's sport might be a little less rude, abrasive, aggressive if their names are out there and they could be perhaps sued for defamation. It's a mean and nasty environment, but it's really like a gigantic billboard.
I like that, because where I come from in the financial game, and again, this has also got distracted somehow. If you wrote a story about a company that could move the price of that company, you had to identify yourself. That was why the Financial Mail under George Palmer started introducing bylines years and years ago, because it was a JSE regulation. Today, anybody can write any damn thing they want about any company. In fact, there are people who live in anonymity and could be pumping and dumping shares for all we know, because we don't know who these people are. And it's almost like a regression, a drift of society where you can hide behind anonymity. I love the quote that you have of one of my heroes, Benjamin Franklin, on your page on free speech. I'm going to read it, Sarah, because I think that it leads into the final point I wanted to talk to you about. It says, without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech. Absolutely love that. And surely that's, we're in the pursuit of wisdom as human beings. But my final point is Tim Noakes. Here's a guy who internationally is highly respected and regarded for the research that he has done. He's also a man who had the courage to change his mind on some very fundamental nutrition areas. He believes, and he said this at one of our conferences, that every idea that you have, you should attack it as though you were the other side to see if there are any flaws in it. And yet Tim Noakes has been has been cancelled, has been attacked on COVID-19, his views on COVID-19, which you may or may not agree with, but surely he has the right to say that. And in many instances, he's not given a platform anymore to even express himself, even though if anybody has got the credibility to share ideas, it must be a man like him.
But you see, that's a political fashion. We have very much the influence of wokeism, for want of a better word, and I'll explain it, where there's a very limited moral set of values that are deemed by the people who hold them to determine whether you have a right to say anything. And we've seen this on college campuses. I mean, the whole Israel-Gaza conflict and the response to it. And people, where the sort of adults are not quite yet entering the room, free speech is not a free-for-all in the sense of, there are no consequences. If people can say that, can even say that, can accuse Israel of committing genocide, but what they can't do is stop the people who will refute that view from access or shut them down or hound them or subject them to discipline. And this is very much what the UK found and why the Free Speech Union of the UK was formed. Because environments, and one always associated universities with being able to say the most outrageous things, because in fact you could only reach the truth, even if you can't always get there. The goal is to seek it by expressing ideas, attacking them, agreeing with them, changing your mind, etc., etc. So it's a very authoritarian impulse. And generally in South Africa, we've managed to avoid that, but there are pockets of it in our political sphere. We've seen it in schools, or we've seen it in universities here. And that's where the ideas, one advantage of social media is, you know, if they can say it, we can say whatever we believe. That's the essence. And this, as I say, where the debate on what should govern our social interaction and is important. I mean, we are so used to insulting politicians. I mean, I think if you took away South Africans' right to insult their politician, and the ANC's tried it a few times. It's never quite succeeded, but it's come close. And the recent security legislation ran that risk. It's the bottom line is, if you can't defend your ideas, even if you don't defend them in your personal terms, if someone doesn't defend them successfully or doesn't think they have a good point, you don't know what you're dealing with. You can't advance a conversation. You can't implement new ideas because a particular elite has decided that a certain ethos should prevail. And that's really what much of the Anglosphere is dealing with at the moment. And I mean, I've seen it particularly with regard to Musk, is the idea that there's left-wing media calling for him to be banned because he can say what he likes on X, he can interview Donald Trump. It's extraordinary. Do you mean to say that the people on the left that they admire, that other people are critical of, can, but those perceived as more right can't? If that can't possibly be correct. You can't. What you don't know about, you can't deal with. And that's why the insulting, the odious, the critical is important, so that you can deal with it, so that you know if there are problem areas in society. And I think, as I say, the Anglosphere particularly is running into problems with that respect.
You made mention of schools. Pretoria Girls, have you got an opinion on what went on there?
You know, I think the biggest problem at the end of the day has to lie at the feet of the Gauteng Department of Education. Because they have pursued it in a political manner. It's destructive. It's reminiscent of Premier Panyaza Lesufi's attacks on alleged racism in schools. And when the hard work was done and the evidence was out there, he failed. And it appears that his successors have just followed the same path, because A, that's not how you deal with it. B, schools need to be empowered to handle things. Things should not come from the GDE. They should, although the GDE responded to something, things have got to be properly investigated, because the end result on all of the allegations made on different sides was children were not found guilty of racism, both black children and white children, although that won't necessarily be that prominent in the media. And there's something particularly heinous about not about allowing this sort of very niche set of views that will restrict people's rights to say and to learn that they can say what they want, but learn how to say it, how to debate, how to engage. Peshawar Girls was an awful example of how it shouldn't be done, particularly dealing with children, particularly dealing with social media, and particularly it's a very easy issue to exploit. And I, in that respect, I think that a lot of the culpability lies with the GDE, because they handled it in every way that it shouldn't have been handled, and it allows the thing to be perpetuated because it limits the ability for the evidence to come out, and lives can be destroyed. And I think that's the other thing people must understand: if they feel empowered, however, to destroy a life, they must understand that they are at risk of having their own lives destroyed in the long run. It's not a fair world, can't be guaranteed, but the risks are there. And that's why with every freedom, there's a corresponding responsibility, and we need to understand the responsibilities, but not shut down the opportunities.
Thoroughly enjoyed chatting with Sarah Gonn, who's Head of Strategic Engagement at the Institute for Race Relations. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.